Welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and it's my pleasure to welcome back to the program today Verlin Klinkenborg. His new book is Several Short Sentences About Writing. He joins us on the telephone from somewhere in upstate. Is it upstate New York, sir?
Yes, that's right.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
It's been so long, neither of us remember it. I always look forward to reading my New York Times because I flip over the editorial page and I hope that maybe I'll see the rural life on the page. And that's what I look for every day. It's not in there that often, but when it is, I always feel rewarded because you write this column for the New York Times as well as other things. You're on your farm right now.
I am. And just relaxing, letting all the animals do what they do, basically.
Is it dry?
It is. It's been bone dry up here.
Hmm. Well, this is a dry book.
Well, let's call it terse, perhaps, instead.
Or pithy.
Yeah, it's meant to say as much as possible in as few words as possible, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very different from, it's based on years and years and years of teaching, but any course that I teach usually has 14 weeks to work out a lot of these problems in. And the trick is how to produce a book that covers some of the same ground and does so in a way that's encouraging to the reader and yet at the same time as honest as possible with the reader about what writing really means.
Well, reading the book, it was somewhat daunting and a source of trepidation for me to think, well, I need to interview him about this book, and do I need to be concerned that he's going to be answering in very short sentences?
Well, the title is a little bit of a misnomer because it should be perhaps several short lines about writing because some of the sentences are actually a little longer than they seem. But it's broken up for readers who haven't seen the book. It's set in type almost the way poetry would be. And the reason for that is it allows me to put emphasis on the things I want to put emphasis on in a way that's a little simpler than the ways you would normally do it in prose with italics or exclamation marks or that sort of thing. And it breaks it down, I think, into very small units that you can lift out of the book and think about on your own without feeling like you're in the middle of an argument or a series of assertions that are meant to logically prove something.
As I read the book, the first thing that came to me was, as a reader and someone who aspires to write, like so many people who will be reading this book, we need to pretty much throw everything out the door to begin with, don't we? All the things we've learned about writing so far?
I think that's pretty true. And the odd part about it is you need to throw it out back to a certain age. For example, I think when most of us started to write as kids, you know, we didn't know much about how language worked. We knew what stories were because our parents read them to us, and we had a really good feel for the rhythm of language, again, because we'd been read aloud to, and we had a really exacting sense of what a sentence really was, how it weighed, what it mattered, I mean, how the words mattered. And then it's a funny thing about our education, because you take all that very sophisticated but really almost unconscious knowledge, and you toss it out and start trying to replace it with a kind of language that's ostensibly more sophisticated, but is really trying to be logical, argumentative, is meant ultimately to lead to a kind of prose that I really can't quite figure out what it's for, because it's usually long, it's usually verbose, it's usually engaged in a kind of a demonstrative but also false logic, and it assumes that everything you write to prove something. And my take on it is very different, and I think you can see it some in the rural life, but it's something I also talk to a lot about my with my students, the goal here isn't to prove anything. The goal is to notice things. The goal is to be a witness to the world around us. Like, again, this is a thing I think that kids do instinctively. So for me, it's a matter of getting us back to a place where we were long ago, where we really understood how stories worked, and where we really understood how rhythm functioned in language. And I think that's something that almost everybody who's ever been read aloud to was quite an expert in at one point.
So as we get older, our ability to notice and even to allow ourselves to notice somehow gets constricted?
Well, no, I don't think it actually gets constricted. It's the problem is there's an educational overlay in high school and especially in college that says at some point you're going to need to be able to write papers or letters or documents that prove an argument. And that's really the fundamental burden of all teaching right at the moment. It's let's go out and prove something. Let's go out and make an argument. Let's go out and use logic. Let's show that you can demonstrate your command of the facts and your ability to arrange them in a way that's persuasive. But what I find with my students is there's a kind of negative result from this. It basically says that what you notice isn't important. What matters is how you arrange the facts you discover elsewhere. Well, I don't think that makes any sense. My students are all experts in their lives. Everyone is. And once you teach them that there's a relationship between what they notice and the language that follows from perception, it's a major discovery for all of them. And you can just see them in the sixth or seventh or eighth week really coming alive, because they suddenly see that it matters how they say things, but it also matters what they notice. And nothing really in their education has said what you think and what you perceive in the world around you is what counts. And that's really the burden of this book all the way through, is to put the responsibility, but also put the authority back on the reader and the writer, somebody who's looking at the world and telling us, this is what I see, and I know it matters because I'm perceiving it.
Verlin Klinkenborg joins us. His new book is Several Short Sentences About Writing. And the key is the sentence.
That's right. I think that what I would say most of us are taught to think about is what are our intentions? What do we want to say in the course of a piece of writing? And the way to help break that habit is to get students back to thinking about what is the actual sentence saying? What's its rhythm? What are the words in it doing? Because this will sound very funny to say, but the basic problem I find with young writers is they actually don't know what the sentences they've written really say, which sounds almost silly to say it that way, but it's really true. They're paying such close attention to what they mean to say that they lose track of what the words are actually saying. So it's really the effort is to get people to think clearly about the construct of the sentence right in front of them, and to use it really as an opportunity for discovery rather than an opportunity just to simply transcribe an intention or a thought.
So we need to really be present, as in begin where we are right now, and to really focus on noticing where we are.
I think that's exactly right. And one of the reasons writers get stuck very often is because they feel that there's perhaps only one way to get through this material. There is a right way, and I have to be in at this point, and I have to get to that point, and what I write is just a way of connecting those things. But I've always found, and I think many writers have found, that writing a sentence is an act of discovery, and you really don't know where it's going to lead. So part of the goal is to be as open to the possibilities that you discover or create in the act of writing, rather than trying to write down a map of your intentions beforehand and then execute it. So it's really a way of recovering. I wouldn't call it spontaneity, but it's recovering an openness to your own thought. And one of the short ways I say this to students is that I'm trying to teach them to be patient in the presence of their own thoughts. In other words, just sit back and think and start shaping some sentences in your head and see what starts to happen. Because I think a lot of people are very afraid of what happens when they sit back and try to be patient in the presence of their own thoughts. They're afraid there's nothing there. You know, they're afraid there won't be any material there, but there always is.
So just stop being afraid of what you think about.
Yep, exactly. And basically, the whole goal of all this, aside from clear prose, is to overturn the natural byproduct of our educational system, which is to say, we'll tell you what's important, we'll tell you what to pay attention to, we'll tell you what matters in the way of thinking. And what I want students to be able to do is to say, this is what I notice. It's important because I notice it. My authority as a writer is based on the acuteness of my perception. It's based on my patience with my own thinking. It's based on the ability to discover things I didn't even know I could say, discover things I didn't even know I could think. And, you know, people often ask me, you know, what my goal as a writer is, and I'd say the simplest way to put it is to always be trying to find things that I didn't know. I knew things I didn't know I could say, ways of saying things that I didn't know I possessed. And that's a kind of freedom that comes from, you know, in my case, years of practice. But it comes to any young writer as a kind of surprise, because nothing in your education has really said, you are what matters. Your thoughts matter. Your language matters. Your perceptions matter. Your testimony matters. Your account of how the world works is what matters. But it is what matters.
A moment ago, you referred to a term that we hear frequently, writer's block.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole concept of writer's block, you address it in this book, and our notion that there's some sort of flow that we get
mm-hmm.
into.
Yeah. Well, it's such a common word, flow, and even writers, you know, young students at any level who claim to know nothing whatsoever about writing know about flow, you know. And I'll hear students say again and again, you know, my writing just isn't flowing. And I've never quite understood that, because flow is something that the reader experiences. But any idea that it's something the writer experiences is nonsensical, because it's just not how it works. As a writer, you're busy making sentences, revising them, reshaping them, rearranging them, all these things that have to do with complete control over your language, none of which has to do with flow. And, you know, the moment you actually start to believe in the idea of flow, you're setting a trap for yourself. You're basically saying, okay, if it doesn't flow, something's wrong with me. If it doesn't flow, my thoughts aren't very good. My feeling is, let's just say it as it is. Writing is incredibly hard work, and if it feels like hard work, that's okay. And the real issue is throw out the idea of flow. Replace it with something much more important. Replace it with a kind of new and careful attention to the nature of your own thinking.
And the sentence that we might write at this exact moment is going to be a very different sentence than the one we might write in 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it took me a long time to figure that out. And it, for listeners who aren't quite clear what that means, basically, if you're working on a piece, let's call it, could be a story, could be a nonfiction article, could be a poem, there is no pre-existing abstract platonic form for it. There's just the place you get to once you start writing. And my feeling, my discovery over the years has been that, you know, I can start a piece one way, and after a couple of days I'll go back to it and I'll start it another way, and it becomes a very different kind of piece. And I realize that there's a kind of strange way in which writers are always occupying multiple universes, which is literally the case that if I start a piece now, it's going to be a different piece than the one I start tomorrow morning, because I'll be in a different mood, my thoughts will be in a different place. And that's a very liberating thing, I think, for most readers and most writers to feel, because what we're told is you have to go from point A to point Z. There's only one way to get there, and it's based on logic. And the result is that people learn to be anxious about the sequence of what they write. My feeling is, why not be open to the differences that are caused by changes in mood, changes in time, different amounts of research, all this sort of stuff. Be open to the fact that the piece you write now is not the same piece that you might write later. Well, that frees you from any pre-existing obligation to follow some preset sequence.
What's the connection between good writing and good reading, as in what you read?
Oh, I think it's just absolutely essential. As a writer, you're feeding yourself by reading. And the irony of it is that, you know, the writers I work with at the college level, you know, they've written millions of words, and yet they're also not very good writers, which seems a little paradoxical to me. But what that means is that we read with attention only to the sense of what we're reading, only to the meaning of what we're reading, and we don't let what we read actually teach us about the way what we read has been written. In other words, we completely separate our experience as a reader from our experience as a writer. And I think that one of the virtues of taking this approach that I take, which is to be really put a lot of emphasis on the concrete element of the sentence, how it's structured, what its rhythm is, what kind of choices you make, it helps you go back to your reading and see that, in fact, whatever I'm reading, whether it's Jane Austen or Jen Didion or John McPhee or James Baldwin, I'm looking at a series of choices that each of these people has made. And it takes you deeper into the prose. It gives you a much more interesting look at what's going on the page. And instead of just reading for the meaning of what you see on the page, you're actually reading for the construction that you see on the page, which means you learn an awful lot more about writing.
And you close the book with a section of excerpts from some writers who I have to guess you admire.
Mm-hmm, very much so. They range from all over the place. There's a passage from John Cheever's journals, for example, describing fires burning in New York City in 1954, and there's a passage from John McPhee and from Charles Lamb, who is a writer from the 1820s I admire very much. And the reason I include these longer quotations at the end is so readers can turn to the end of the book and see some passages to sort of explore the things I'm saying in the book right there. And I give lots of hints about the kinds of questions you might ask about the prose and questions about what you might think about in terms of the choices these writers have made. But those are just examples of the kinds of questions any reader can ask about anything he or she is writing or is reading.
We're getting some wonderful snatches of ambient sound. It sounds like you've got the highway there, and occasionally a vehicle will go by. And
that's right.
That last one sounded like maybe it was a truck.
It was a truck with his Jake brakes on, unfortunately.
Well, I actually enjoy it because it creates that sense of place.
Okay.
Our guest is Verlin Klinkenborg. His book is Several Short Sentences About Writing. Reading your work over the years, I've always looked forward to the summers because frequently you would go out and teach a course in Los Angeles, and you would drive cross country, or you would go up to Montana, or you do things with horses, and it sounds like this summer you decided to stay at the farm.
Actually, quite the opposite. This summer I started in Ireland.
Did you?
And then went to Norway, and I'm going to Mozambique on Friday.
Are you really?
Yeah, I am. This was the summer in which I was supposed to stay at the farm and kind of just think, but I got some assignments that are taking me out of the world that I'm really, assignments I'm really enjoying. But you're right, that effort to get out of the usual run of my habits is really important to me. And it's funny because I just finished pulling together and editing a new collection of pieces that will be called More Scenes from a Rural Life. It's a gathering up of the last decade of rural life pieces.
Oh.
And it's interesting to watch because it's a very different book from the Rural Life, which was a collection of rural life pieces that was published in 2003. But it's got those California trips in it. It's got all of my detours all over the place, and it makes me feel more peripatetic than I like to feel sometimes. But it was also, it was actually really interesting too to go back and collect those pieces because I don't often reread my stuff, and this was a chance to go back and tighten up things and really register the way my prose has changed over the last decade. I think people tend to think of writers getting to a certain point and that's where they stay, but my sense of what I do as a writer is very different than what it was 10 years ago, and it's interesting to go back and adjust those older pieces so they feel more like what I'm doing now.
So when you say that all writing is revision, you have the ability to go back and revise again pieces that you mm-hmm. thought were finished.
Well, it's funny because there's actually three layers of it. One is the piece as I wrote it. The second is the piece as the Times published it, which is usually slightly different and sometimes a little more than slightly different. And now it's me going back and looking over my original writing and just listening for places where, I guess the simplest way to say it is that as those pieces appear individually, it's as if you have to establish the entire context in each piece. But since they're being gathered as a book, I don't have to do that. So I'm going back and trying to make these things read as a continuum, not as if they flow into each other, but as if they're all part of the same book. And it really forces a different kind of attention to my prose. And actually, I know a lot of writers dread revision, but it's really astonishingly interesting. If you get over the feeling that you're fixing what's wrong and correcting things as if it were a problem in grammar or spelling, it's really, again, just a matter of exploration. What was I doing with the rhythm here? What would I like to do with the rhythm? It was lots of fun, I have to say.
Verlin Klinkenberg joins us. His book is several short sentences about writing. You grew up on a farm in Iowa. And now and then, when you write, you'll go back and you'll look back at something that happened, or even today. Don't you still have family that are farming out there?
I do, and I need to correct that a little bit. My dad grew up on a farm, but I was a town kid.
Oh, okay.
He became a high school teacher, and I grew up in a couple of small farm towns in Iowa. But I spent a good chunk of each summer up with my cousins in northwest Iowa, and indeed the home farm is still going strong. My cousins are still farming up there. And they're the ones who kind of keep me honest whenever I call this place I live on a farm, because it's not even remotely a farm. It's a place I happen to live that has animals. They're the ones who are actually the ones doing the real farming.
Out here in Ohio, I think we would call that an acreage.
Yes, that's right. A place to get in trouble.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I hadn't thought about this because it happened 30 years ago, but after I read your book, I recalled 30 years ago, my brother was working as an architect, and he was asked to write a piece for some sort of architectural journal, and he didn't have time, and so he said, well, why don't you write it? And I had never done any professional writing or any paid writing, and so I struggled and labored over this thing that I really didn't have any expertise or knowledge of, and I really worked on that first sentence of the piece because I thought, you know, this is the sentence where I've got to get them. And I worked on it and worked on it. I spent weeks on that first sentence, and I was so pleased with it. It was only 5 words long, and, and I read your book, and I thought, oh, gosh, I'm so proud of that sentence now. And then I recalled, after it got done with the editors, after the editors finished with it, that was the only thing left. They liked the first sentence, and all the rest of it was gone.
Well, sometimes it works the other way, which is all the rest of it stays, and they take out the one thing you really like.
Oh, that's even worse.
Yeah.
I didn't mind. When I saw they left that sentence alone, I didn't feel too badly about the whole thing.
Well, you know, and that's, I think people, one of the ways people get in trouble with writing is by being in a hurry and, you know, taking that time to just explore a lot of different possibilities for an opening sentence probably made a huge difference to that first sentence.
Verlin Klinkenborg has been our guest. His book is several short sentences about writing. We were fortunate to track him down today because, as he just mentioned, he's headed to Mozambique. Is that for some reporting?
Yeah, it's for National Geographic. I'm going. There's a photographer who's doing a series of aerial photographs of the coastal Mozambique, so I'm going over to just poke around and see if I can find material that will supply a text to accompany his photos.
Have you been to Africa before?
I was in Tanzania a few years ago, but I've only been once before, just for a very, very brief time.
Well, that sounds like a fun trip, and you just got back from Ireland, and was that another travel job?
It's for a piece that will appear in the Times Tea travel section. I went over to do a sailing course in the south of Ireland for a week, which was just a huge amount of fun, and then got to spend 10 days or so traveling along the coast of Norway again for another National Geographic story. So it's been a busy summer.
Klinkenborg, Norwegian?
German, actually.
Okay, just checking.
Yeah.
Well, it's really been a pleasure having you on the program again.
I've enjoyed it, Vic.
Our guest has been Verlin Klinkenborg, and his book is Several Short Sentences About Writing. If you are interested in writing, you might want to check this book out. For the Book Nook, I'm Vic McKeonis. Thanks for listening. Next week on the program, a stunning literary debut, a collection of short stories called Battleborn. We'll be talking to Claire Vey Watkins right here in the Book Nook on WYSO, your public radio station. The Book Nook is recorded at Soundspace in Yellow Springs and engineered by Chris Hertzler.